Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Nuts Weekend. I am your host for the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo D'Adolfo and Patrick Mifflin. Say hi, guys.
Hello. Yo.
So Chris Sologi may or may not be joining us later on, considering he's currently in Ohio. It's possible that he hasn't landed yet.
Mm-hmm.
He's just floating around in the stratosphere somewhere.
Yeah.
As you do.
Or his power went out. One of the two.
Yeah, or his power went out. That's also true. Some weather's been going through Ohio recently.
Kansas, Missouri.
Pretty much that entire region.
Yeah, it's been
is like half underwater. So, but yeah. So if he joins us later on, we'll put him on, and he can tell us what he's been up to. But for now, it's just going to be the three of us.
Yep.
So this week, once again, we are reminded how venal and stupid and cynical and cowardly are. But it's not all bad because, the Klan wanted to have a rally in Dayton, Ohio, and they had one. Didn't go so well. We'll tell you why. Also, even though Trump's fucking wall is never going to get built, some people are already trying to get that thing built on private land. Countdown on how long that thing will actually last before somebody dynamite.
Yeah.
Fucker. And Donald Trump is really fucking thin-skinned, and we're going to tell you how thin-skinned he is, because basically, he made the United States Navy act as like his safe space.
Hmm.
Motherfuckers. But some other good news. Big Pharma is finally going to get its fucking some of its comeuppance. At least in Oklahoma, after shoveling out all those opiate pills to innocent people and turning them all into junkies. Hmm. About fucking time. Oh, yeah, and of course, we got your normal amount of television and entertainment news coming about. Also, apparently, somebody out there, A, thinks Fidel Castro is still alive, and B, thinks they're as bad as AOC, or vice versa.
Okay, then.
I tell you, I cannot wait until the boomers all die. But with that all out of the way, we're going to go ahead and start off the show, as we always do, talking about what we've been up to this past week. So, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So, for me, this week, it's been getting caught up with The Expanse. I am finished Season 2, all the way through that, and hoping that this weekend I'm just going to binge on Season 3 and finish that. Yeah, some shit happens in Season 2 that has basically, changed the landscape completely.
Let's say much like the books.
Yeah, the world is not the same anymore. And there are things in it that really shouldn't be there. And none of them are Donald Trump, but that's beside the point. So that's been good. I'm waiting for the Deadwood movie to come out on HBO. I think that's...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That just kind of came out of nowhere, so...
Yep.
Yeah, so waiting for that. And other than that, I've been watching a lot of wrestling videos on YouTube.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, this week was the 20th anniversary of the death of Owen Hart.
Mm-hmm.
20 years ago, a stunt went terribly wrong, and basically he all because Vince McMahon wanted to find a cheaper way to do the stunt.
Well, I don't know if it was cheaper or just wanted it to be easier. I think easier is the best explanation. But it cost him his life, and that's no good.
Mm-hmm.
You're definitely not cheaper.
Yeah.
Not the first time that Vince McMahon fucked over the Hart family.
Yeah. But yeah, if you haven't, there's a YouTube channel I'm kind of liking right now called WrestleLamia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very good. They have a nice documentary series called Behind the Titantron. And one of the episodes was all of the events leading up to Owen Hart's death. They didn't have the whole Chris Benoit incident. So they don't really shy away from the really touchy stuff.
Yeah.
And actually present all of the facts that they managed to find and, let you make your own decision. In some cases he was, in some cases, that's been a good channel. I've been really enjoying that. And that's Other than that, it's been like E3 getting ready. I'm like kind of not sure what to expect. But, you know, Sunday we're doing our pre-show. And then the week after that, the show kicks off in earnest. And, yeah, it's going to be a ride.
Yep.
Yeah. And so much of the prep is just mental at this point.
Yeah. Yep.
Mental and...
Really, at this point, you know, considering everything that's happened industry-wise and the... Yeah, it's going to see how that's going to reflect in E3.
Well, for one thing, is Sony even doing a stream or anything? Like, I forget what they're calling it, but their sort of version of Nintendo Direct.
Yeah, State of Play. Even... They're supposed to be doing another one, yeah.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. So
We also know that Cyberpunk 2077 is going to be there.
Yep. Yeah, if it's anything like last year when they play trailers, you kind of need to really pay attention to those trailers.
Oh, yes.
Usually about the last 10 seconds.
Yeah. And sometimes the first 5 seconds, because you'll end up with free codes for The Witcher 3.
Yeah, that also happens sometimes.
Yeah, so I'm kind of looking for that. And other than that, well, that's it. So how about you, Pat?
I've just been gorging myself on more Final Fantasy 14 info. Just being that the embargo lifted on Wednesday for sort of the nuts and bolts of the fine-tuning going on in Shadowbringers. And so we now know how the jobs are actually going to shake out in practice. And so I've been watching a bunch of detailed videos for how some jobs are going to work, and really just sort of planning out how my own builds are going to go. Because I've definitely prepared my cross hotbar layouts for Gunbreaker and Dark Knight at the very least. And I'm Samurai probably isn't going to require much in the way of change, but you know, we'll see how it goes. But there's just such a wealth of information out there now. And I still feel like I've only scratched the surface of it. There were interviews coming out with Naoki Yoshida from the media tour, and there's one of them that was with Work to Game, and that one really drove home the fact of just how lucky we are to have Yoshida as a developer, as the lead producer on this game, because he is invested in ways that not a lot of developers are. And it's really refreshing to see, and he's receptive to feedback in really refreshing ways, because sometimes you'll just get lip service from a developer when they do a Q&A or something to that effect. With Yoshida, you really get the sense that it's a collaborative process. Like, there was one moment, I don't remember what it was, but they were talking about some feature or another that that wasn't really that hasn't been implemented yet. And the reason wasn't because they had thought about it and said a flat no to it or anything. Yoshida just thought about it for a moment and realized he hadn't considered it. And in the end, it turned out that he's going to talk to the developers, and it's going to be a feature that they can probably turn around for maybe 5.1 or something. All because it got brought up in an interview. So things like that really drive home the fact that that we have a really good lead producer working on this game, and it makes me even more excited about the future, even going beyond Shadowbringers.
Yeah, I get the sense from them that this is a team that actually really enjoys their jobs.
Yes. It isn't just Yoshida either. I mean, this is a studio that on their free time got a lot of the headgear graphics working on the two new races, just because they believe in this game so much that they wanted to put in the work and get it going, even though it was something that had already been said, I think, by Yoshida that wasn't going to be ready for 5.0. Mm-hmm. And so it really is just an ongoing labor of love that I, for one, I'm happy I've been able to take part in it on the user end from the time the 2.0 launched. So, yeah.
Oh, hey, Chris is joining us.
Hey.
Yeah,
yes, Chris finally joined. No, it's cool. We know how the weather is down there. So,
well, it wasn't really that. It was I had a headache, so I was taking a nap before the show. Oh. Went a little longer.
Overslept.
Yeah. Well, that completely undercuts our jokes.
It was a good nap.
Yeah, but anyway. Okay, so, Chris, you got perfectly just in time, too, because it's your turn. What have you been up to this week?
Yeah, so I was at the movies earlier. I went and saw Aladdin. Which is good. Yeah, kind of goes the way you expect.
Was it good, not great?
I would say it was good. Yeah, though.
Okay.
I was also having a headache, so it might have been knocked me out of the mood a little bit. But yeah, I was like, oh, it's happy singing and all this, and I was like, oh god, I need to go, but I don't want to leave, kind of thing. But yeah, there's lots of singing in it. It was just pretty good. There's one song that's a little bit weird. Feels very much like a song that's in there because of like women's power today compared to like when this thing originally came out.
Mm. Yeah.
That sort of thing. But other than that, it's all pretty good for that. Yeah, I also saw Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Yeah,
which was really quite good. I watched the first one yesterday just to kind of refresh myself, which was good because it basically starts off right after that.
Okay.
The main characters, their family's like front and center at the very beginning because they are affected by the attack, the aftermath of the Godzilla fights at the end of that movie.
Okay.
They lose one of their kids to that. And then it kind of sets into motion what they're doing here. It's set 5 years later, so it's current times now. But basically, a bunch of people decide, hey, we're going to set loose these titans that are, you know, stuck in the ground or the ice or whatever, wherever they're at. And guess what? It all goes real bad.
Shocking.
Kind of the whole plot is man thinks they can control these nature, these beasts. And they have no clue how to do it. Everything goes bad because of that. But yeah, the fight's pretty cool, especially the final one kind of sets up something interesting for whatever they do next. Especially when I saw the post credit scene. The way they set that stuff up. But yeah, that's a good follow up to the first one, and even with the Kong. I haven't seen that one yet. Technically like the second one in this series, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. It's like a dumb action movie. I've seen these kaiju kind of fight. Fuck shit up all over the place.
It's amazing how that whole it's amazing how that whole sort of franchise, you know, it started with this really kind of moody, artsy sort of disaster film that was sort of like an allegorical look at, you know, the effects of nuclear warfare and what it does to people. I mean, the original, even with the absence of that Raymond Burr inserts, there's a lot of stuff in the original movie that didn't make it over to the American version that is really fucking dark. There's a reason why the first in the original film, Godzilla, you know, how his quote-unquote breath is always like some cartoonish, like, laser coming out of his mouth.
Yeah.
It's not in the first movie. It's basically a mist that sets everything it touches on fire.
Yeah.
And it's...
And here it's
what it's supposed to be.
And here he's got this, like, blue flame Which, interestingly, the way they kind of set up, like, his spine is like the power meter for that.
Mm-hmm.
His spinal spikes. So you can, like, see him, like, powering up as it fills up kind of thing, which mm-hmm. is weird. But, yeah, it's fun. And this, like, these last couple movies are, like, all about man's effect on nature as far as, like, global warming and all that. That's why mm-hmm. these beasts come out of, like, hibernation, essentially, is, like, to reset things and all that, which is, not subtle at all when they specifically say, like, have, like, eco-terrorist groups that are, like, trying to set these creatures free
mm-hmm.
to undo the damage we've done.
By doing more damage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but also they kind of liken it to, like, how wildfires are actually good for the forest. They help, like, clear out dead plants and all that stuff, sort of thing. Like, that's kind of what happens in the wake of these fights, in a way, which, yeah, I guess so. But, yeah, this movie's been pretty good. I'm looking forward to see them do more with that stuff in the future. It's sort of one of the more successful, like, weird cinematic universes.
Mm-hmm.
When it's all just about essentially these giant beasts fucking shit up. Not really too much story-wise that ties them all together other than, like, hey, Monarch's, like, behind some of this stuff. And all that. But yeah, I've been watching some more Netflix stuff. There's Rim of the World, which is one of the movies they put out recently. It's kind of a disaster movie about, hey, what if these kids that are sent off to, like, summer camp, what if aliens invaded while they were out there? And they end up having the key, literal key, to help save the world. And they have to deal with this stuff, which is pretty well done. It's a little bit kind of fantastical the way they kind of set it up. Like, anytime they try to offset their responsibilities to an adult, like, something gets fucked up. They get killed or whatever, and it's like, oh, well, they really want you guys to do this. Kind of just a little bit forced writing. It all just lines up to them being the perfect ones to save everything, but other than that, it's a good movie. The alien stuff is pretty weird in that one. Because they kind of just have this one alien that spawns that lands on the Earth near where they're at. They manage to survive the first attack, and then he somehow just chases them throughout the rest of the movie. Like, that's, like, the big alien threat for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty weird, but that was pretty good. I also started watching Tuca and Birdie, which is one of the animated shows.
Oh, yeah, I've started watching that, too, and, God, that show is hilarious.
Yeah, it's funny and it's very weird.
People want to call it, like, it's basically the grown-up version of Rocko's Modern Life. That's, like, the best play I can put it. It's not people want to compare it to BoJack Horseman because of the art style and everything. Yeah. It's much more lighthearted than BoJack is.
Yeah, I think promise. The showrunner worked on BoJack Horseman.
Mm-hmm.
She was, like, one of the artists there. It definitely
She's the art,
like,
director. Yeah. Pretty sure.
Yeah, and she, you can definitely tell she has, like, a strong sense of art direction on this. Cause it's a show that's full of style and full of music as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the first episode especially is, like, just bouncing music all over the place.
Yep.
But yeah, it has Ali Wong and Tiffany Haddish as the two leads. Tiffany Haddish's character is kind of best friends in this kind of world that has lots of anthropomorphic animals. One is Tiffany Haddish's character is kind of the outgoing, overly energetic, sex positive character, and Birdie is kind of very introverted and all that kind of character. And Tuca moves out because Birdie's boyfriend is moving in at the beginning of the show, who's played by Steven Yeun. And he's very much kind of similarly kind of introverted, very much rigid schedule kind of thing. Not really one taking risks and all that. And so she has to kind of adjust her life to not having somebody so outgoing at her, kind of just next to her all the time. And it leads to some lots of weird shit to happen.
Oh, yes. Lots of weird shit.
Yep. I think one of the episodes I was looking for is like Birdie, her sex life with her boyfriend is kind of getting stale, so she's trying new stuff. Mm-hmm. And so he tries just being, trying some new stuff and like starts spanking her and telling her she's a bad girl, and she just starts crying because she's never had anybody do that before. Because she's just very much always like a teacher's pet, kind of always trying to get good grades kind of thing. And so, like, just having somebody say something opposite of that is just very upsetting for her. It's like, nah, that's very funny and weird.
My favorite is still the one where we see Birdie at her job, and there's that one dickhole who says that really off-color comment to her, and so I'm pretty sure it was her right boob, basically just pops off of her chest, says, fuck this, I'm leaving, and just disappears. Walks out the door.
Yep. Yep, yeah, it's very much open with what it's trying, the kind of messages it's trying to push out there. And kind of does a good job with that stuff. But yeah, it's a fun show. I'm going to keep watching it. Let's see. Also been just doing a bunch of streaming this past week. Let's see. Sunday we played Black Desert, which was pretty cool. Mm. Though it's a game I could tell is very, very intensive on PC as far as controls, because they just kind of fill up the controller with commands on the consoles. It took a bit to get used to the controls. It's not like as well designed as I would say like Final Fantasy 14 is on consoles.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of led to a point where I just, like, initially I didn't know how to do attacks because I couldn't. I was just hitting B the whole time, which was my kick. Because the other one's squaring. Because they also use this, I think, the right shoulder button, right trigger, and like Y. It's like you don't have stuff on some of those buttons just yet, so it doesn't do anything, but other ones are. It just controls weird. Mm-hmm. But also, it does a good job of kind of keeping things going, moving quickly, because I think after like 2 hours, I was like level 13. And yeah, just kind of running around doing quests. It doesn't really do a great job of telling you like where to go for the quests, or letting you kind of swap between them in a sense. So it just tracks one at a time, even though it has like four or five listed on the side of the screen. So I was kind of just doing mainline for a while because it wasn't as easy to swap between them for which it was following. Just some weird stuff like that. But for just pure, it has some pretty good action. The way you have lay out your skills to kind of flesh out your combos and that sort of stuff, it works out pretty well for what it's trying to do. And yeah, you do get to work a bit with other people on some of your quests. Though, yeah, they do have the chat stuff that MMOs have, but when I was getting there, it was getting flooded with people talking shit and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Then some, like, potential, I don't know, occasionally. There'd just be like a bunch of stuff like being listed in the marketplace that I could see, even though I turned off most everything. But like server notification stuff. Like there's a lot of customization on that, but I still couldn't quite get it to be just my stuff that was going on because I didn't want to risk it like having people saying, you know, racial slurs on stream, like that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Which I didn't see too much of it in the first 2 hours I was playing before the stream. But yeah, it was kind of like, I don't want to see these fucking idiots here. But yeah, it works out pretty well. No, like, sub requirements as far as I could tell. But it's also part of Game Pass, so maybe that was kind of supplementing that stuff.
Mm.
So I don't know what it's like if you don't have Game Pass. But other than that, it works out pretty well for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of weird seeing an MMO on Xbox, because they've been the one kind of very resistant to those kind of games for like the last 10 years or so. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was nice. Definitely want to be streaming some Xbox stuff this weekend, because there's two big games that came out recently for them, Void Bastards and The Outer Wilds.
Mm-hmm.
Outer Wilds I have had since last E3, I think.
Mm-hmm.
One of their mix pots that was just this weird 100 meg install I had for a long time that I finally clicked on the other day. And it's like, okay, we got 4.5 gigs for you to download. Like, okay, well, I wish I would have done this another time, like automatically. That's part of Game Pass as well, those two games. So anybody that has that can check them out, and I've been hearing good things about that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, on Tuesday we played Dead Cells, because they put out a big expansion called Rise of the Giant, mm-hmm. which adds new areas, some new bosses, I think a couple new enemies and items and all that sort of stuff. And that was a lot of fun to kind of jump back into it, because it's a game I kind of bounced off of after a few weeks. And sort of even during the stream, you know, just stunk it up as that kind of thing. Because I was kind of playing things up for the stream. But trying to find the new stuff, which there's... It has a new custom mode, which lets you kind of set a bunch of parameters for different things to happen versus just letting it all be random. Which I was surprised to find out still lets you... work on progress towards unlocking stuff with the different the souls you get for beating enemies. So I was like, I could just continue on from where I was at in the regular mode. Which I would have figured that would have been all completely separate for how much control you have over it. So yeah, it lets you kind of make things as easy or as hard as you want it to be. But yeah, I don't think you get any trophies for anything you do in there, which works out fine. It seems like a good way if you want to, you know, just practice your skills on certain things versus just letting it be completely random. You can do that sort of thing. But yeah, that's a pretty cool expansion they put out. Definitely going to be playing a bit more of that. Well, so yesterday we played some Switch stuff. So there's a Devolver Digital sale that's going on Switch right now. With a bunch of their stuff, it's on sale for like 30 to 50% off. For the most part, even like Swords of Ditto just released a few weeks ago. It's on sale for 30% off, which is more than the pre-order discount they had for that. So some of those people probably got burned on that. I think even one of their upcoming releases, Hue, is also on sale for like 20% off for pre-order, which that's a good game if you have not checked it out yet. But I played Ape Out and Downwell on the stream for that. Ape Out, which is a really fun kind of action game, a little bit of like maybe Hotline Miami to it, where you're an ape and you're kind of have these enemies that kind of swarm to you, and you're kind of trying to use your gorilla strength to push them into walls to kill them instantly, or pick them up and throw them at people, that sort of stuff. There's some enemies that have like explosives tied to them, so you definitely do not want to like push them up against the wall if you're right next to them, and sort of take the splash damage for that sort of stuff. But it has a really strong style to it. The music is really nice because it's kind of like jazz drums that play play up as you're running around to kind of feel like, you know, if you're getting like a hit on the drum every step you're taking kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That just gives a really nice kind of frenetic pace to it. And that's really fun. I got through two of the albums on the stream. And it's kind of roguelike in that there's the stage you're trying to get through is randomly generated each time. And so when you die, it shows you an overhead view of the whole map, shows you the direction you went, sort of thing. But you also see the word dead around it. So they splice that map through the word dead. So like it's a really kind of cool like UI style kind of thing, which I think is partially because Bennett Foddy worked on this game for the art, who has done a bunch of weird ass games on Steam. I think there's it's like Getting It Up with Bennett Foddy, which is a weird game about you're a dude in a cauldron.
Yeah, trying to get around with a sledgehammer. Yeah,
and it's like very physics heavy kind of thing. Yeah, dude makes really weird stuff and has a unique style to his own. And Downwell is very much a roguelike where you're going down a well. Mm-hmm. Along the way, there are enemies that you're shooting through your jumping, through the bottom of your feet. And that game maybe highlighted how the D-pad isn't so great on the Switch Pro controller, because I kind of lost control a little bit at times, which kind of happens because you get to those kind of platforming bits where you're kind of falling down longer than you maybe want to, but kind of hitting the, controlling yourself the right way where you're kind of just missing everything conveniently way. But it's a game you want to be playing a little bit more slowly, but I was playing a lot faster, so I think the longest run I had was about 3 minutes and 27 seconds in that, which you can't get too much done with that much time. But that was kind of a good ender to the stream, because it was like, I'm just getting diminishing returns at this point, so let's end on this. That game does some really good stuff, like you get different art styles as you play more of it and unlock them. So I had some by the end that was like the Game Boy kind of color palette to it, mm-hmm. Or the Virtual Boy, which I didn't use that for too long because like, this is pretty neat, but also it's just red and black and it makes things hard to see a little bit. But there's also gameplay styles that you can unlock as well, which the second one I was using was floaty, so you get a little bit higher jump to it. That game's a lot of fun, and I think it's a good Switch game, much like it was good on Vita, because you can kind of set it in like Tate mode and play it that way instead of playing this very vertical-oriented game in horizontal mode. That's good. There's a lot of good Devolver Digital stuff on Switch that people should check out if they don't have it already. Like Katana Zero just came out a few months ago, is also on sale. That game is one that people should have a check out. And, that's been kind of it. I got new wireless earbuds because ears ones I was using with my phone, the ones I was also using with PSVR, that one of the earbuds just kind of wore out. The wire broke on it, which was like $13, so it wasn't too much of a loss there. But these ones were on sale for like $60 from like $150 usually. So I was like, these are pretty nice discounts. And they actually work pretty well. It has one of those things where the case itself is the charger for it. So you put them in, it charges them up after you use them for a bit. And so it gives you like a little bit extra battery life to them. But it's really nice having that. Something that's like more, more useful and like having no cables for the first time is like really nice. Not have to worry about like, I was walking with if I'm doing dishes or whatever, and like accidentally wrap the cable around one of the knobs and it rips it out of my ears, like fuck, kind of thing. Not having to worry about that kind of thing is really nice. Yeah. I just need to get new headphones for PSVR. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm using the default ones that came with it, which are not good.
Oh. Ooh.
Like, were they barely... the same ones that came with the PSP, aren't they?
I don't know. They're very much like just baseline kind of earbuds. It's like not made for human ears, really. Very specific.
Do you like over-the-ear headphones? Or?
The ones I had for PSVR were kind of over-the-ear, but they were kind of flexible in a way, so I could sort of mold it around the edge of my ear. So they fit in that, sir, kind of thing. And that's what the earbuds I have for the wireless ones. Mm-hmm. I do kind of wish I had a dongle for those because they're just Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Because it would be really nice to have for PSVR. But
That's weird. I would have thought the PlayStation could have paired those.
No, I don't think it has Bluetooth for audio. I think it's just stereo kind of plug-in kind of thing.
Well, if you don't mind a pair of wired headphones, Sony MDR-7506. They're not too expensive. They're about $80, and they'll be the best headphone.
Okay. And if you got a link for that, put it in the chat. I'll check it out. But yeah, that's been real nice to get that in. Because that was like a Memorial Day sale. And it's like, I couldn't pick it up from the store either. She's like, oh, you can get it like 2 weeks from now. I was like, oh, fuck that. Mm-hmm. It shipped to me in like 3 days, so let's do that. Yeah, Chad, we've been having a bunch of storms around here lately. Luckily, we've gotten off lucky compared to some of the other parts of the state, like Dayton and Salina over in the southwest corner of the state, which got rocked with tornadoes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll talk a little bit more about that later on. But yeah, it's just been a lot of rain here. Luckily, I haven't been out in it too much this week. So that's been at least the bright side of that. But yeah, other than that, I think we're in pretty good shape now. It seems like it's just going to be fucking hot as hell. Because it's just been humid as hell this past week.
Yeah.
Which is
not, yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, that's kind of been it. How about you, Brandon?
Oh, before we move on.
All right.
Well, you weren't here for when I was going over what I'd done, but yeah. I was wondering if you'd looked at any of the Final Fantasy XIV job overhaul news, because I know you play what is basically going to be a paladin. I was wondering if you had any thoughts on what they've done with that job.
I have not, but I've been looking at when I'm going to use that code I got for Heaven's Ward to kind of get back in for another 30 days. So I assume I'll get at least the job tweaks part of it. That stuff. So that'll probably be some point during the summer. But I also have I think Heaven's Ward and Stormbringer or Stormblood for PS4. So I can continue on from that play on PS4 as well at some point. Just have to use the codes and find a good 30-day window where I'm not going to be like super busy and waste a bunch of the time.
All right.
Which I don't have a problem doing that with like a free trial like we had with the month. But yeah, I don't want to like waste these extra times when it's like the one chance you get with these when you buy the expansions.
Oh, they don't get you the free month.
Oh, they don't?
Nope.
You don't get 30 days with those?
Nope.
Oh, well, screw that. maybe that won't be back in.
Oh.
I don't know. I'll probably get back in at some point, but and for right now, I haven't been paying too much attention to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So as for me, first and foremost, my primary gaming is still Dragon Quest XI. Those of you remember, I said last week that I thought I was getting to the end of the game, and then it pulled a Final Fantasy VI on me and
blew up the world.
Ended the whole world. Yeah. So basically, it's been sort of me doing the Final Fantasy VI thing of going back traversing the broken world. And in this case, it involves going around getting the various to get the thing back on so we can go back to the heart of Yggdrasil and get everything back again, everything back going again so we can beat the Dark Lord. There's a couple of hell of a frickin' boss battles that I've had to deal with. Because, you know, Dragon Quest is like the king of like, you know, ailments. When it,
yeah,
what it can do to your party, everything, because it ain't just like anything like that. It's also like beguilement, where a character will do puff puff on one of your party members, and they'll become absolutely smitten and decide that they want to kill you. And that just so happened because one of the boss battles also happened to be one of my former party members. And then she's already a hard boss battle, but then you fight her, and then after she's finished, you then have another boss battle, even her boss battle, immediately afterward. And I don't even mean, like, there's not even a break to, like, save or anything, like, just immediately into the next fight. But, you know, the game, you know, it gets better. Once I was
never fond of when RPGs do that, honestly.
Yeah, the, you know, like, I can handle, like, having, like, a multi-stage boss battle when it's, like, the last fighter, but throwing in that kind of bullshit is, yeah, it's
bullshit.
Part of, That's part of the old school JRPG aesthetic. I'd be okay with seeing
going off into
the dustbin. Yeah. Along with like one of those dumbass scavenger hearts that makes you cross the goddamn world near the last third of the game just to get into this one final dungeon.
Well, at the very least, they should have the decency to give you an airship or something.
Yeah. Which I'm not sure right now, because the thing with Dragon Quest games is if they do give you a boat or something, usually eventually it may evolve to like a hot air balloon or something. Mm-hmm. Still haven't gotten to the hot air balloon yet, but they've hinted that apparently there's some kind of flying contraption that you can use at some point, but no idea when I'm going to see it. Sure would like to see it now, though, because these freaking... all these bullshit random encounters that you encounter when you're out at sea is really getting annoying. Yeah. So other than that, those you don't know, over on Game Grumps, they started playing the Phoenix Wright games, and I realized, I have never played the Phoenix Wright games. So I went on PS4 and bought the Phoenix Wright trilogy, and I'm currently playing those as well. I did not realize how genuinely funny and also unbelievably gripping those games are. Also really freaking stressful. those games are fun. I'm currently in the third case of the first game, which is the Silver Samurai, which is about your client is this dude who's like the lead actor in like a tokusatsu show, and the guy who plays the villain in that show, they find him murdered, having been pierced through the chest with the hero's spear that he uses as a weapon in the show. So he's currently in the detention center, and you're trying to clear his name by going through the studio. Trying to find evidence and stuff. That game is both like weirdly serious and weirdly zany at the same time.
Yeah, you got a lot of weird ass people that are in there.
Yeah,
like the old woman who just gets nuts every time you try and criticize people she likes.
Yeah, who works as a security guard. Yeah,
yeah. So you're trying to trick her to get away from there.
Mm-hmm. And then there's Red White, who I am absolutely absolutely. He's Donald Trump.
Yeah. Probably that kind of character.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that character, he's like the CEO of this company called Blue Core, which is like a information gathering service. One of those groups, right? That also sort of doubles as like a blackmail operation.
Yeah.
So he's his name's Red White, and the head of the company is called Blue Core. Red, white, and blue. You know what that means? Capcom is anti-French.
That'd be blue, white, and red.
Shut up, you're ruining my joke that I totally stole from Gang Grumps. But anyway, that's good stuff. I went to the used bookstore this week, and I found a deluxe used edition of Battlefield Earth. So I decided I'm going to reread that, because it's been a good 10 years since I've read it. You know, I was in high school when I read that thing.
So that's the hard cover that you
have? No, it's the soft cover version with the Frazetta painting on the cover.
Okay. Well, it's still a brick.
It's still a knee breaker. So
you're marked for an evidence room.
Yeah. Those of you don't know, that book, so obviously everyone knows that there was also that god awful movie adaptation, which does not do the book any justice whatsoever.
No.
Some of you might also know that L. Ron Hubbard also did a soundtrack to that movie. I mean, to that. And he got people like Chick Corea to work on it. It's bad. It's like really, really bad.
Yes, it is.
I have heard it like put up in like the top five worst albums ever recorded. Like, it's legitimately that bad.
That's terrifyingly bad.
Oh, you have no idea. No, Hubbard doesn't actually sing or anything, but he composed most of the music for it. And some of it is passable because it has people like Chick Corea playing it. And others has, you know, that song Wind Splitter, which you've heard it. It's meme-tastic. So you've come across it at least once or twice.
Yeah.
Also, I am not going to try reading Mission Earth again. That is a god-awful, just piece of shit. For those of you who don't, okay, so people are curious. Mission Earth, what is Mission Earth? So Battlefield Earth was like Hubbard's first return to science fiction after like, what was it, like 30 years? Yeah, 30, 25 years, something like that. But after that, he decided to what was going to be his grand project, and it was called Mission Earth, and it was going to be a novel that was 10 volumes long. It was supposed to be like this massive satirical epic about aliens plotting, you know, ingratiating themselves into Earth and Earth culture in order to eventually take it over. And I tried to read that series up to around book four and finally just threw the goddamn things away because they were such shit. Which makes me actually think that I actually do not think that Hubbard actually wrote the whole thing. Because there's a lot of things that you can say about L. Ron Hubbard, you know, a con artist, a predator, a grifter, a liar, a narcissist. He was a genuinely gifted writer. I mean, that's how I was able to read Battlefield Earth, which is like 1,000 plus pages in paperback, and love every second of it. So
I also don't think you can fabricate a religion without knowing how to write.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's true. So other than that, well, it's, you know, summer has more or less come to Georgia. And like I said last week, it burns, it burns, it burns. But you know what? But also usually comes when it's a humid summer. Mm. Fruit flies.
Yay.
Gross.
We have a fruit fly infestation in our house.
Woot.
And, yeah, we've come up with a couple ways to deal with it so that, you know, we don't have to call the exterminator over again. But, yeah, usually, okay, so, like, here in the South we have, like, homemade remedies of how to deal with fruit flies, and the usual one is the mixture of apple cider vinegar and dish soap that you put like into like a glass or a cup, and then you put like a plastic lining over it and poke holes in it and like wrap the whole thing with like a rubber band or some scotch tape. Because the idea is that, you know, the flies are attracted to any kind of fermenting fruit, right?
Right.
So apple cider vinegar, right up their alley. So they get to the cup and they'll smell it and they'll try to, you know, they'll climb in through the holes and then, you know, they'll get into inside of the cup. And what happens is if they don't like instantly fall into the apple cider vinegar, the fumes from the dish soap basically suffocate them. Then my mom found out, you know what, they really seem to like my white wine, so, you know, her white Zinfandel. So we started putting that in a glass, and holy crap, did they love that shit. And they don't even, like miss a beat either. They just dive straight in. Dumb, dumb fucking animals.
Hey, booze!
Yes.
Yeah. But, yeah, so that's pretty much been my week. Anybody want to add anything before we move on?
Well, I think I'm about good.
I'm good.
Mm-hmm. All right, then. Well, then, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And to sort of close out the series that I've been doing the last couple weeks, the Big Four of Japanese science fiction, I'm finally ending a guy who is essentially considered to be, like, Japan's equivalent of... And he had such a massive influence on Japanese sci-fi In ways that you probably wouldn't imagine. And in some ways, he's probably the most Japanese of all of the classic Japanese science fiction writers. His name was Shinichi Hoshi. He was born in 1926. He passed away in 1997. And he was a novelist and short story writer. Now, one of the things about Japan and Japanese culture that they brought that was like – that's always been like a big part of just their entire sort of artistic oeuvre or artistic style been is the use of minimalism. So like think of like all the various things in Japanese art and culture that uses minimalism. Good example, haiku. Literally, it is a entire poetic art form specifically based around, you know, three pithy sentences with like, you know, five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables.
Yes.
And, you know, it's only a few words, but it's meant to be loaded with so much meaning. You know? Yeah. Something like that. Or, you know, look at the old Japanese painting and artwork. Most of it is like very simply based around just some brush strokes. And, you know, like sumi-ie, for example. It's an entire form of painting where you use as few colors as possible, using as few strokes of the brush as possible. And yet somehow managing to create these amazing pictures, you know, because of limitations that the form puts upon itself. Well, Shinichi Hoshi was very much in that way the most Japanese of all science fiction writers, because although he obviously wrote quite a few full-length works of both science fiction and crime fiction. In fact, he was he won quite a few awards from the Mystery Writers of Japan. He became the master of a form of short literature, of short stories, known as the short story. Like, that's literally the term that it's used. You could call it flash fiction, but that doesn't really work because it tends to be a little longer than most flash fiction. Most flash fiction is usually, like, at most maybe a couple paragraphs, but his work tended to be slightly longer than that. The reason that he wrote about 1,000 of those during his career. A couple of the collections of those are actually available in the United States. There's one called There Was a Knock, which is a collection of 15 stories, and I believe a longer, more definitive collection called The Spiteful Planet and Other Stories that was published later on. But these types of stories usually are heavily based around the concept of suggesting a lot of what's going on around while the action within it is fairly straightforward. So like, for example, one of the stories that he's probably actually so famous that it ended up being one of the first Japanese science fiction stories published in English. It was published in the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction in June of 1963. Is called Boko-chan, or Miss Boko. And basically, it is about this android woman who works as a waitress in a restaurant on, like, a planet colony. And in only a few paragraphs, it tells the story of Miss Boko about her sort of her routine working as a waitress. But what it suggests about everything else is very epic, because it seems to imply that at some point in the past, something happened with humanity that has driven it into fewer numbers, so that now robots actually outnumber humans. And, God, I really don't want to spoil it, because Shinichi Hoshi's work is one of those things where it's so good that you just want people to actually go out and read it for themselves. But let me put it this way. If you're familiar with like Yoko Taro's style of writing, especially yes. When it comes to like not just in his games, but like the type of like rewriting that he puts inside of his games, like the whole storylines he'll give to like a specific weapon. That's very much the type of stuff that Shinichi Hoshi would write. Literally short story haikus that suggest so much, and yet with the words it says very little. The other big reason, the other big thing is he was very good friends with one Osamu Tezuka. And you might have noticed I used the character up there. I said, Boko, are you familiar with Wii 3, a.k.a. Amazing 3? Hmm. Now you know where the bunny got her name from.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Also, there's another character in Amazing 3, I believe the young boy character, that was specifically named after him.
Hmm.
Yeah. And actually, Tezuka was a fairly common illustrator for a lot of Hoshi's stories when they were put into like magazines and stuff. Hmm. In fact, they were so Hoshi was so influential on Tezuka that Tezuka actually wrote a few of these short style short stories himself. And in fact, in Japan, there's something called that you can get called the Osamu Tezuka Novel Collection, which is a volume that collects all of the prose fiction that Tezuka wrote during his career. And three of those stories, one of them involves him, a character who finds a mushroom that looks a lot like a patchwork pig with a snout out, which is a concept that Tezuka took upon as sort of like a symbol or like a mascot. He originally got the idea from a passage he read in one of Hoshi's stories.
Interesting.
Yeah. So Hoshi, of course, passed away in 1997. He left behind quite a bit of a legacy, obviously, being the fact that, you know, he was such a massive his legacy is still very much in a lot of Tezuka's writings, especially his writing, the way he would approach his stories. The idea of, like, using robots not like as... Because if you've ever compared to like the way that robots were portrayed in Japanese science fiction in like the 1950s and 60s, compared to how they were used in American science fiction, because robots in like American science fiction is like the Terminator, yeah. You know, it's the Tremors, it's the it's the evil it's the Matrix. You know, it's the evil robot menace that'll eventually destroy and supplant mankind by violence. Hmm. In Japan, their robots are Astro Boy.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of that is because of Shinichi Hoshi, because much like Asimov, he was one of the first to really put through the idea of, like, does a robot have a soul? And stuff like that.
Compliancy.
Yeah. And, of course, like, Bradbury, a lot of his work, most of his work was short form, and was a lot of it was cautionary in nature. And that kind of closes out this whole series The big four of Japanese science fiction. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid.
I think I'll top that off with a suitable haiku, I think. Walking blob of greed, spoiled brat in old body, soul-sucking black hole.
Yep. It is snowing on Mount Fuji. All right. Now it's time to start proper. And as always, we have to start with our assholes of the week. Guess what? It's not Donald Trump. No.
Sadly.
It is toy and baby supplies manufacturer Fisher-Price, who kept on selling a popular baby sleeper despite not even giving it any safety test, and it ended up killing several children.
Yep. Yeah, the title here is a little bit worded weirdly, just because it's a pretty long thing on the article itself. But yeah, they have a nice little story here about how bad this whole thing went. So they say, like, it was 2009, a small team of engineers at the toy company outside Buffalo seemed to have solved one of the most vexing problems for new parents, getting babies to sleep. Their invention was an inclined sleeper. They named it Rock and Play. Held babies on their backs in a padded frame in a 30-degree angle, like a recliner. Let's see the difference. Yeah, babies can sleep at a comfortable incline all night long. There's no product on the market that safely did that. Was how Fisher-Price employee dreamed it up. Put it, according to a later court deposition, he sold 4.7 million of these between $50 and $80 each. But they developed it based on faulty beliefs about infant sleep with no clinical research into whether it was safe. Rather than seeking the advice of pediatricians, consulted just a single doctor, a family physician from Texas whose expertise had already been doubted by judges, who would eventually lose his medical license, according to a review by the Washington Post of thousands of pages of court depositions, emails, and medical studies, along with interviews with doctors and regulators. The first time, the first time a Fisher-Price hired a pediatrician to evaluate the Rock and Play was 8 years later as part of the company's defense and product liability lawsuit, which... Yeah, it seems like if you're going to make something for kids, you should have people that are explicitly trained in baby health to kind of help you guide it.
Yeah, versus just we're going to make this, selling it specifically as a health product.
Yeah. Mm. And yeah, so they had they have more than 30 babies died in the product after they turned over. While unrestrained or under other circumstances, that's awful shit to put people through.
Yeah, fuck's sakes, do your due diligence.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like especially when your products are literally dealing with their lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
Corporate malfeasance strikes again.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, in comparison to Donald Trump, I think killing babies is probably much worse.
Give it time. We'll find out he probably killed a baby at some point.
Well, I mean, there is that whole border thing.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, right. Mm. Yeah.
We haven't forgotten about that.
Next up, our hero of the week. And our hero of the week is not none other than Senator Bernie Sanders, who, in a new campaign he's doing, has put out a call for all past, current, and future, that won't work, but past and present Walmart associates, i.e. me and Pat, to basically come forward and tell our stories of, you know, because it fucking sucked. And I included my story.
Yep.
I'm sure they got some doozies.
Oh, I'm sure they got buried in dirty laundry.
Is there a place we can go so we can read these? Because it doesn't look like it. But no. Yeah, so Pat, did you put in your story?
I'm still working mine out. I've got more to say than I thought I was going to at first, but once I finish the novel, I will make sure to pass it along.
Well, there's a limited time, Pat.
I know. Yeah.
That's what we in the writing business like to call motivation. But yeah, so if you're wanting to know what I put on, basically I told the stuff that I've told on here several times before about, you know, working in the deli, having shoddy equipment that was falling apart, including frayed fry baskets that threatened to break off at any time and fall into the hot oil. Not having the gloves that need to be used to take the rotisserie chickens out of the oven, so having to take those things out real fast with only the the sanitation gloves. Between me and my sweet tender hand flesh, and then of course the whole thing about how we didn't really have a mechanism to outload all of the old used cooking oil, so we had to wheel out this greasy rusted old contraption with two broken wheels. Fill it up and then wheel it halfway across the store over to the tank where it's filled and hoping to God that, you know, the tank was empty so we could actually put the oil into it. Because if it wasn't, you basically just had to leave the contraption there overnight and hope that they would come that following day. Because if they didn't, then you had to go and unload all the old cooking grease into the big buckets that the bakery used to keep all of their frosting for their cakes and wheel them on one of those gurneys over into the back of the store, hoping to God the whole thing doesn't fall over.
And if it did, I'm sure maintenance absolutely loved that.
Oh, yes, they did. Yeah, so, oh, yeah. And then, of course, there were the lack of rubber mats that they were supposed to provide for us so as to not create those lower back injuries that come from, you know, standing, you know, for hours at a time.
But they didn't.
And they were supposed to provide like four of those. We only had, and neither one of them were located at the areas where they needed to be.
Shocking.
Yeah. All I'm saying is the Walting family is like one of the first candidates for the guillotine come the revolution. Anyway, so we're going to see what Bernie and associates are going to be doing with all that stuff. Cause, maybe they'll just take it and just dump them out front of the Waltons estate. That'd be nice. Or better yet, launch them through their window with a cannon. Yeah, that'd be good. But anyway. All right. So now it is time for the proper show proper. And the fourth story we have tonight. A Ku Klux Klan, because I wanted to point out, there really is no such thing as the Ku Klux Klan anymore. It's basically just a bunch of different groups that claim the legacy of the Klan, and they hate each other about as much as they hate on white people. Anyway, the Klan had a rally in Dayton, Ohio last week.
Yep.
Guess how many showed up? Nine. So how many counter-protesters showed up? Over 600.
Yep.
That's a bit of a discrepancy.
I believe the whole shitstorm that happened around this is that the county approved this whole rally, not the city.
Yeah, and it cost them like a cool, what was it, something $150 million? I mean, $150,000.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I think, let's see, it says here, Dayton city manager said it cost the city about $650,000 in personnel and materials, which is not nothing. I think people have been suggesting, like, hey, send the bill to these people.
Yeah,
one of this rally. But yeah, there are a lot of people coming out in opposition to this, like the local chapter of the Black Panthers. Antifa showed up, obviously. Even some religious groups showed up. I think the Church of God had some people there as well. And it's like just pretty much about everybody showed
up. The entire like rainbow of the American left showed up to tell all these you know, toothless hicks to go fuck themselves, basically.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and there's a lot of good tweets they have embedded in here to show you, like, a lot of the good signs they had, as well as local businesses also had their own signs out in front of their stores. Let me see. There's one that says, yo, KKK, you're in the wrong hood, hashtag Eastside. nice. Eeny, meeny, money, mo, your racist ass has got to go. Toxic Brew Company puts fuck off on there with 3 Ks.
Yep.
And the Barrel House.
Yeah, a bunch of like the,
the Barrel House
restaurants
sign,
and delis and stuff out on there.
Said, get your hatin' out of Dayton.
Yeah.
This is like 2 days before the tornadoes hit.
Yeah.
And yeah, the... Yeah, they had lots of police presence there from Dayton and as well as like Cincinnati and nearby precincts to help out. And luckily, nothing happened.
Yeah.
Which makes sense because there's only.
Part of me almost wants to count the police protection among the Klan's numbers, but that might be a bit much even for me.
Yeah.
Basically, if you're. The reason they had so many. Cops and city officials in on this was because basically they were expecting Charlottesville 2.0, which thankfully didn't happen.
No.
But Let's just say they were afraid that was what was going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I think the only thing that might have happened without police protection is 9 dead Klansmen. No loss.
Yeah, but they were definitely caged in for the area, so they kept as separate as they could from everybody else.
Well, that's the thing. Once I figured out there was only 9 of them, I probably would have let the crowd do what it will.
Yeah. Yeah, but luckily nothing really happened, but kind of. I saw good.
But 9 Klansmen are still alive.
Yeah.
But they look even stupider than they did before.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got to find this. There's a video that's good from Snap that was a guy listening to a song. He just throws in fuck the KKK in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good way.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can find it to link it for you guys. But nice peaceful.
So, could we say at this point that the heyday of the alt-right is officially past?
Yeah, it seems like it. Like, if 9 is all that they managed to get, it doesn't really look good for that type of movement.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely want to think it's on the way out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
Hopefully with the Trump administration.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which may or may not make it to...
Yeah, we'll see. But, all right, so next story. So I believe this story, this didn't come up last week. I think this was this week. Some conservative group out there put out a video of it was Nancy Pelosi doing one of those talks at like one of those progressive organizations, question and answers type things, right? Mm-hmm. The Democrats occasionally put on. And they slowed the video down by, like, what was it, like 0.25 or something like that. And they, you know, just enough so that it kind of sounds natural, but at the same time it makes it sound like she's slurring her speech, like she's drunk off her ass or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, if you speed it up just a little bit, then you hear it, but it sounds like normal. Yeah. But problem is, this thing like went out, and you know, there was a lot of really stupid people who thought it was real.
even the president even pushed it out as a real thing.
Well, that's to be expected.
Yeah, it's like,
because it was Fox that did tweet it initially, so of course, Fox News.
It's like the people you expected, you know, pushed it out there and kept it going, even as people realized, no, this is fake.
Yeah.
And sort of showed the hypocrisy of the parts of, like, Facebook and Twitter and even YouTube of, like, hey, this is fake. Why are you still leaving it up?
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Well, I'm actually going to defend Facebook on this one, which is rare.
Yeah.
Because this isn't, like, new. There's actually several slowed down drunk Trump videos floating around the internet right now. So it's like, yeah, if we can make fun of them, then we ought to have a little bit of a thick skin when they make fun of us. You know,
The thing though, most people who look at those drunk Trump's videos know that they're fake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The ones who saw the drunk Pelosi ones didn't.
Well,
yeah, and especially when I think Facebook frames around as like, this thing has been, you know, debunked, so you can make a choice. Like saying, you know, believing that's real is like a legitimate thing, like validating that part of the whole thing. Or it's like, you know, if it's fake, you know, say it.
Yeah.
Don't sit here and be like, well, Trump was, you know, unfortunately not correct about this thing. Is like, no, he lied. Like, stop saying, being fancy about saying it because you're afraid they'll get upset at calling him out.
Yes, exactly. Although, weirdly enough, apparently calling someone a liar is actually like considered could be libelous.
Yes.
Apparently. Yeah. According, I mean, that's the excuse Penn and Teller get when they you know, did Penn and Teller's bullshit and, you know, didn't call anyone a liar, but they sure as hell did call them every other word. Yeah. But, yeah, so anyway.
I mean, if it's demonstrably false, then it shouldn't be libelous.
Yeah.
Well, if it's demonstrably false, then
it should. But you know how America's legal system is.
Yeah.
Well, it's sort of. Yeah, I think also the other issue is kind of whether they knew it was wrong or not. And it's like with Trump, you can't necessarily know that he understands what fact and fiction is.
I don't think he understands what day it is. So.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Next up, Trump's wall. It's never getting built.
No.
But there's a handful of people that are really freaking intent on seeing at least some of it get built. So a private group that's led by both Chris Kobach and, God damn it, Steve Bannon.
He had to show his face again, didn't he?
Yeah, his hideous, Shonda's pockmarked face.
Has this popped yet?
God, I hope it does soon. Mm. But yeah, they're using private funds to build a portion of the wall. Countdown to when somebody drives a fucking truck through that thing has now started.
Yep. Yeah, so they have a GoFundMe that was used for the funds for this. Mm. Which got them, I think, let's see, like 20 million? Mm-hmm. Like someone's like, you know, ridiculous at what people are willing to put on to this thing.
Yeah, well, if you remember, there was that dude, that war vet who was like a triple amputee. You know, he managed to con a bunch of like millions of dollars out of people wanting to support that stupid wall.
Yeah. Yeah, it's stupid, but also they're not exactly putting up too much of it. I think it's like half mile at most. And yeah. It's like, you know,
it's going to be just as effective even if they finish it, so.
Yeah, I think it's in near the New Mexico-Texas state line, near El Paso.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's where this is going up.
Yeah. I get a feeling like this is probably the only section of the wall that's ever going to exist.
And yeah.
It's probably just going to end up being like a reminder of the stupidity that we went through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If it ends up.
And I'm sure the graffiti that will inevitably pile up on it will reflect that.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah, it'll probably end up being one of those stupid highway tourist traps.
Yeah.
The Thing or, you know, the world's largest ball of yarn, one of those things.
Yeah, roadside attractions and stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah, at least something positive would come out of all that. Mm. But anyway, next up, next story. Big Pharma is finally going to get some of its comeuppance.
This one right here.
Oh, yeah, I did. Mm. Oh, yeah, and this is a big one, too. So for those of you who don't know, President Trump went over to Japan this week.
Mm-hmm.
Prime Minister Shinichi Abe.
Shinzo.
Shinzo Abe, that's right, sorry. Treated him to a sumo tournament.
Yeah.
Which they actually apparently had to break a bunch of protocols in order to let that happen because they actually installed chairs for the front row, which for those of you who don't know, for those who are in like the front row at a sumo match, you're traditionally sitting on a cushion,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the lotus position.
Mm-hmm.
But they gave him some chairs, then they he presented the presidential trophy or whatever to the winner.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who don't know, this all happened when we suddenly realized that apparently North Korea has started up their nuclear program again, or may have launched something. Hmm. So as you can imagine, Prime Minister Abe was not happy.
No.
President Trump, for his part, said, "I'm not too worried about it." Says, "I trust Chairman Kim." But
should we just let that statement hang for a minute?
Yeah. Speaking of which, because of that, apparently the story going around now is that because that whole the talks with North Korea fell through, five of the guys that were responsible for getting those talks together, Chairman Kim had them executed.
Just like working at Walmart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so now getting back to the story I was previously talking about. Over in Missouri, Big Pharma is not in Missouri. God damn it. I keep skipping down for some reason. Anyway, this is in Oklahoma. Big Pharma's finally being taken to trial over the opioid epidemic. So, a quick question. Do any of you guys have anybody in your family who has gotten hooked on opioids?
Or
painkillers? Huh?
Me.
Yeah.
A while back.
Yeah. I've got some folks and family and friends of the family that have gotten hooked on the stuff. Because, you know, they took a bad tumble and their doctor irresponsibly gave them Oxycontin. And, yeah. And if you've done any research, you know how basically Pfizer basically did everything they could to shovel that crap out as fast as they could.
Yeah, they wanted the whole world pickled.
Yeah. Everything from like a swing CDs to T-shirts to a little plushy Oxycontin pill.
Yeah.
And because of that, here's the thing. Oxycontin is really expensive. So you got to keep getting that fixed. What's cheaper than Oxycontin? Oh, heroin.
Yep.
So then they become heroin addicts. Or eventually they'll find fentanyl, which is basically death in pill form. Anyway, finally getting dragged to trial in Oklahoma.
And yeah, they had three companies lined up for this.
Mm-hmm.
They were on the defense, but two of them have settled
mm-hmm.
to get out of it. The one that's still there is Johnson & Johnson.
Yep.
Of course.
And yeah, now they're going through the trial, especially with the Attorney General who's heading this up, accused drug makers of, quote, cynical, deceitful, multimillion-dollar brainwashing campaign to establish opioid analgesics as the magic drug.
Yeah.
And yeah, kind of, I would definitely recommend go watch the segment that John Oliver did on opioids, sort of showing how it came into being such a overprescribed drug. Because initially I think it was underprescribed to a point where people were just, you know, having to suffer a lot. So doctors and so the companies pushing this stuff encouraged them to overdo it. Which leads to a lot of extra stock and all that people would have.
Mm-hmm.
And you start taking because, like, well, this makes me feel better. And it goes bad from there. But yeah, they call it the quote, the worst man-made public health crisis in the history of our country and the state, the prescription opioid epidemic. Which, yeah, it's probably pretty accurate. Yeah.
Well, I hope they get nailed.
Oh, I hope they get nailed hard.
Yeah, and they're expecting Johnson & Johnson's defense to basically be like, well, you guys did this to yourselves kind of thing.
That's like, not a defense.
No.
Yeah, like, well, you're that's the basically one. What like the Sackler families and Purdue Pharmaceuticals have been saying for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, there's also a good recent bit John Oliver did on the opioid crisis, specifically the head of, I think, Purdue?
Mm-hmm.
Who's
Sackler family, yeah.
Yeah, who's kind of specifically, you cannot really find out any information on him on if you, like, Google him. Like, there's famously, like, very little in the way of pictures or anything like that. So he ended up bringing in, like, a bunch of well-known actors to just perform, like, the...
Stuff he said in, like, court depositions and
like
stuff
Bryan
like
Cranston
that.
Like, and some of the others, Michael Keaton,
mm-hmm.
do their own takes on this stuff. And it's like, yeah, even hearing people like this say it, it's awful shit.
Yeah, so I hope they get raked over the coals.
Yeah, fuck those people.
Yeah. All right, next up. Out of Missouri. So, as you've been paying attention to the news, you know that a bunch of states have been wanting to put forth these extremely restrictive and patently unconstitutional abortion restriction laws.
Yeah.
And Missouri recently had theirs put up. And I believe that was also the one that ended up getting stopped by a federal judge.
Yeah, I think it's Mississippi.
Okay, that was Mississippi. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway,
there was a stay announced in Missouri, though.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, there is only one clinic in all of Missouri that will still provide abortion services to women. Mm-hmm. And today, it was going to finally be shut down for good because its license was going to expire. Hmm. Yep. And then at the very last minute, at like, I think it was this afternoon, court came forth and said, nope, you guys can still stay open for right now.
Hmm. They have until Tuesday.
Hmm. Yep. Yeah. As we said before, it's not banning abortion, it's banning safe abortion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also because it's a very cynical political ploy by a handful of politicians to have a very, you know, a faithful voter base to rely on.
Yeah.
Phil, do you guys ever have these types of loonies up in Canada?
We have a handful of loonies like that. Yeah. It's not to this effect, not to this level, though.
Or this influence, at least.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely an anti-abortion, you know, subset of people. Mostly we ignore them.
Yeah. That is a very Canadian thing to say and do. Wow.
We could learn a lot.
Yeah. Speaking of these restrictive abortion laws, next story. State of Louisiana decided to join the party. Even though their governor is in fact a Democrat, a very socially conservative Democrat.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, very much a Southern Democrat who is kind of like Joe Manchin in West Virginia, where he's a Democrat, but he often has to and probably wants to vote for Republican causes to try and keep his job.
Yeah.
Essentially.
And he said that he's going to sign it, so.
Yep. Mm. Yeah, no exceptions for rape or incest.
Nope.
Just like the others.
Seems to be a trend.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Again, I'm pretty sure that these are all, like, pre-written by, like, one person.
Yeah.
In, like, a certain organization somewhere.
Yeah. Copy, paste.
That's happened before.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if we get all of these bills together and like analyze them. Wouldn't be too surprised if we found out that they are basically all the same wording, with like a handful of exceptions. But anyway, next up in my home state of Georgia, oh boy, our bill went into effect. I can't remember. I think it was like last week or a couple weeks ago. I don't give a crap. I'm numb at this point. Well, as you also know, Georgia is also a major entertainment hub these days. It gets its location for lots of popular films and TV shows. Some of the biggest film and television producers have started using Georgia as a source. I mean, for God's sakes, that's where Adult Swim does most of their stuff.
Yeah, all of Turner.
Yeah. All of Turner. That includes CNN. Yeah. Well, as you can imagine, all of those producers and actors and directors and people who are involved in all that, they're not too happy with this. Yeah. So, amongst other things, Netflix has decided that if and when this goes into effect, we're probably just going to take our business somewhere else.
Yep.
Uh huh.
And Netflix was one of the first to speak out against this.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see the quote here. Let's see. We have many women working on productions in Georgia whose rights, along with millions of others, will be severely restricted by this law. It's why we will work with the ACLU and others to fight in court. Given the legislation has not yet been implemented, we'll continue to film there while also supporting partners and artists who choose not to. Should it ever come into effect, we'd rethink our entire investment in Georgia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big investment.
Yep.
Yep. And then coming with them is the Walt Disney Corporation, which basically said, nice state you guys got here and a nice movie business. Sure, be a shame if something happens to it.
And it's like, hey, you like those Marvel movies we film here? Would you like to keep it going on?
Yeah. And then, of course, there was a bunch of others.
AMC, Sony, Warner, NBC, Viacom, CBS, Showtime.
Yeah. Yep.
All joined on the party.
Yeah, you know, AMC is specifically for The Walking Dead, which is set in Georgia.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, here's like one of the major biggest series in TV right now.
Yeah.
It's set directly
basically
in your state.
Basically put my state on the map, made people actually want to come here.
Yep. That's weird for a zombie show.
Yeah,
that's suspect.
Here's where all the dead are. Let's go move there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess the plan is step one, draft a anti-abortion bill. Step two, pass the anti-abortion bill. Three, tank the economy.
Step four, ? Step five, profit.
Yeah.
Or deficit.
That's about how much they thought it through.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh,
It's been really fun trolling social conservatives on Facebook about it, though.
Oh, it is the most fun, especially when you realize just how terrible their knowledge of just basic human biology actually is.
Yeah. Which
I hit them where it hurts. I hit them on their knowledge of scripture.
Mm. Oh yeah, Deuteronomy and Numbers.
Mm. Yes.
Read them sometime. Mm. You're not going to like what
they really
say.
They really don't like throwing Numbers chapter 5, 11 through 31 in their face.
Yeah. Oh, no. That makes them froth at the mouth in anger. Yeah.
They would prefer that those weren't included in their Bible because then they wouldn't have to deal with it. But, hey, it's there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways.
All right. Next up.
The angry reacts isn't going to make it go away.
Yeah. Next up, Mackenzie Bezos. Who is that the ex-wife of Jeff Bezos?
Ex-wife,
yep.
Yeah. You know, when she divorced Jeff Bezos, she got a pretty penny out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, $37 million.
That's a lot of money.
Or 37 billion.
$37 billion. Yeah. And she's come forth this week and declared that she is giving half of that to charity. So let's see, 37 billion divided by 2. That's
19
billion dollars.
Yeah, which is a lot, but also, you know, it'd been good. It was taxed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, properly. Amazon doesn't pay tax.
No.
Yeah.
Nor does the Bezos family.
Mm.
And yeah, like, imagine if you had $18 billion going into, not this government, but the concept of government, functional governments, being able to spend that money on
it's good to dream
things people want.
A government that might actually work.
You know, like, hey, what, you know, we could pay probably for a good chunk of this country for universal health care with that money.
Yep. It's true.
Baby steps, I guess.
We need like a GoFundMe for the government that's just for billionaires to put into.
Yeah.
To spend on stuff like that.
Mm. They actually already have that, you know.
Mm. Yeah.
There really is a donate.gov site where you can donate to the United States government.
Yeah.
Just make sure it's in a separate account from what the Trump administration can access. And,
right.
And the Republican GOP.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll be okay then.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Maybe.
Mm. Next up. Will Connolly, the young man who became an international hero of the people when he took an egg and broke it over that douchebag from Australia's head. Yep. Who, by the way, I remember if I remember correctly, he lost his election.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Well, as you know, he set up a GoFundMe account. And
I think somebody set up for him.
Yeah.
Like, assuming that he was going to be arrested and have to go to court over it.
Yeah.
That's what which I don't think happened.
No.
Well, he got the money for it anyway. He decided he's going to donate it to the victims of the Christchurch shooting. Well, the survivors, rather.
Yeah, the Christchurch Foundation Victim Support. $99,922.36.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice gesture.
Yep.
Yeah. and continue his reputation as international hero of the people.
Yeah.
Yes.
And as a bonus, I guess the lawyers who helped had to help him with this decided to work pro bono as well.
Yep.
But none of that even went to the lawyers.
Yep.
Nope. It's good when people agree on something.
Yeah.
Yeah, like fuck Fraser Anning.
Yeah. Let's talk about that next. Yeah. Speaking of weather, over in Dayton, Ohio, which, you know, Chris, is, of course, isn't near Cleveland, but...
Yeah, we're on the opposite side of the state, northeast Ohio.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Over in Dayton, as, you know, the tornadoes were touching down and severe weather was going haywire. And I'm guessing where you live, the local news does this stuff, too, because it happens here.
Here, they take over.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically the weather part basically takes over for... God, it happens here in Georgia, like, what, 30, 50 times a year?
Yeah. Yeah, here it's not as bad.
Yeah. So there's no – they took over because, again, a bunch of really strong tornadoes were touching down in Dayton, and people needed to know information and get to safety. And there was a handful of douchebags who kept tweeting saying, you guys are I'm missing the Bachelorette because of you guys. And –
yeah, this weather guy was not having it.
No. You know what? Screw you people.
Yeah, he said, we have viewers complaining already. Just go back to the show. No, we're not going back to the show, folks. This is a dangerous situation, okay? Think about this if it was your neighborhood. I'm sick and tired of people complaining about this. Our job here is to keep people safe, and that's what we're going to do. Some of you complain that this is all about my ego. Stop, okay? Just stop right now. It's not... I'm done with you people. I really am. This is pathetic. It's a dangerous situation here, and people died, so... He's completely right about this whole thing.
Yep.
I think he also came back, said, I'm sorry I did that. It just really bothers me. We have people that don't care about other people's safety around here. It's just ridiculous.
And it got better when the Bachelorette in question herself asked what the hell is wrong with these people.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. One person's killed, dozens of homes damaged.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Next up. Once again showing you that we are probably right back in the middle of the 1960s, a man went in front of the White House and, set himself on fire.
Yep. And he's died since then.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, for those of you knowing, wondering, what am I talking about? Back in the mid-60s, during the Vietnam War, this Buddhist monk by the name of Thi Quan Du, in the southern part of Vietnam, as you don't know, right back then, the southern part of Vietnam was ruled over by President Diem, who him and his immediate family were all Roman Catholics in a country that was majority Buddhist. And he was one of those people who wanted to, let's just say, inflict his particular strain of conservative Catholicism on the rest of Vietnam's population.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can guess, the Buddhist majority really didn't like that. Hmm. So this one dude in protests, him and a team of monks went out to, I think it was the capital. I can't remember if it was in Hanoi or what, but set themselves out front. And he sat down in the lowest position. He did the that chant that Buddhist monks do, Namu Amida Butsu or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they poured kerosene on him and lit him on fire. There's a famous photograph of it. You may know it as the cover to Rage Against the Machine's first album.
Yep.
And since then, a bunch of people have been inspired to do the same thing, and it looks like this guy is one of them.
Yeah, the White House.
Yep.
Yeah, they don't know specifically what his motivation was, but you can probably guess it was like, this is basically what you're doing to me.
Mm-hmm.
I assume.
Yeah. All right. Next up, was this a Major League Baseball game or was it like minor league? Minor League Baseball.
Yeah, well,
That's why. Yeah. So this was during Memorial Day, right? And they were doing a Memorial game. And you guys know what happens at sporting events here in the U.S. during Memorial Day. They have that big salute to the troops that they'll do.
Sometimes so they'll have from when they do it every other day.
Yeah. Well, in this case, you know, it's usually like they'll have them like maybe do a parade or you know, maybe do colors and, yeah, you know, do like a rifle salute or something. And sometimes they'll have like a musical guest, or in this case, they'll have like a video that they'll play over the big monitor. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if any of you guys have ever had, have ever known anybody who worked for like, you know, like a stadium or a coliseum or whatever where baseball games are played. Even if it's like minor league, nothing gets up any kind of video. It doesn't matter if it's a video or an animation or just like the Kiss Cam. Hmm. Nothing gets up onto that monitor until before every level of the organization from the bottom to the top has approved it.
Hmm. Yeah.
Which is my long way of saying that somebody was really stupid because they played this big video, and while they were talking about the enemies of freedom, they showed, obviously, they showed Kim Jong-un. Okay, understandable. Fidel Castro, who is dead.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody informed them of that.
Probably not.
And then for some weird reason, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez showed up.
Yeah.
Like, what? Wait, what? One of these things is not like the other.
Two of these things is not like the other. One of them's
dead.
Yeah,
what was the other one?
I'm saying there's Fidel Castro's dead.
He was dead.
Yeah, well, no, that's true.
Can't be really an enemy of freedom when you're not living.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's part of this whole video they were pulling. That was about a speech that Reagan gave.
Yeah, it was the enemies of freedom. Yeah, wasn't it like his
1981 inaugural speech?
Yeah, it was when I think they called it the Evil Empire speech.
Yeah, yeah, it's about a 3-minute video. Yeah, near the end, they started showing different people, including AOC, and yeah, their whole defense was let's see, the video was not produced, created, or commissioned by the Fresno Grizzlies. It was carelessly taken from YouTube. And let me see. They're basically saying, like, we didn't vet the whole video. It's like, it's a 3-minute video.
Yeah.
If you can't watch a whole 3-minute video, you shouldn't be playing it.
No.
Like, that's slightly over the amount of time it takes to microwave a burrito.
Yeah.
It's like,
serious job.
If you can't watch a 3-minute YouTube video, then what is your job exactly? Mm-hmm. When you're trying to find videos for this, event kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're just taking it from YouTube. Mm. It's not something they actually made, so it's like you even had less work to do. But yeah, they apologized for, which nobody really believes.
Mm.
But also, like, their parent team, the Washington Nationals, I don't think has said anything about it yet. Which is like, yep, this is one of your teams.
Yeah.
Why? And you're specifically the team in Washington, D.C.,
yeah,
where, you know, AOC is for most of the time.
Yeah.
And yeah, so AOC also responded and said, what people don't, or maybe they do, realize is when organizations air those hateful messages, my life changes because of the flood of death threats they inspire. Mm. And that morning's where I wake up, and the first thing I do with my coffee is review photos of the men. It's always men who want to kill me.
Yeah.
Yep.
And of course it had to be Ronald Reagan because he has a cult of personality that would make Stalin blush.
Mm. Yep. Yeah, this team is in Fresno, California.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oops.
Now that just sounds like a logistical nightmare to me.
Yeah.
The team's based in Washington, D.C. and Triple A's in Fresno.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's one of the weird things about the minor league system.
Mm-hmm.
Is they don't have the team centered around the area where they're at. Mm. So I think the Yankees used to have one that was here in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
I think eventually the Indians got control of that team.
Yeah.
Somehow, I don't know.
Yeah, they try to fix it over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now the Mets just recently called up a player who had to drive there from Philly, I think. And he basically got lost getting on the way. Because I assume he hasn't played in New York much, so he doesn't know the way. And I'm sure whatever GPS he used, you know, wasn't exactly the most accurate.
Clearly.
Yeah, I think he showed up in like the third inning, something like that. Managed to still hit like the game-winning home run when he came in at the end, but
yeah.
Okay, that's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, but like he got lost. I think got lost on the way to the clubhouse too.
Yep. All right. Well, next up, and we're finally out of the serious part of the show. So, next up, dual screen laptops are. I'm actually surprised they haven't been a thing up until now, but they are now a thing thanks to Asus.
Yeah, and HP,
yeah.
And Acer, and several other manufacturers.
Yeah, this is kind of a neat thing where like the bottom screen is like a touchpad.
Yeah,
kind of over the screen, so you can kind of snap things to that.
Oh, so it's a Nintendo 3DS.
Kind
of more useful, I guess.
Yeah.
Because just the way the 3DS was made, mm-hmm. they wanted you to focus on the top screen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of those games didn't even use the bottom screen for much. But yeah, it's called the ZenBook Pro Duo that they're putting out. 14-inch wide display up top. And the bottom is about half of what the bottom part.
Yeah.
The keyboard takes up the rest. And it's a pretty cool idea for what they're doing there. And you're going to kind of have the display go across both. As they show with like some of the wallpaper stuff going there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you can also, let's see, touchpad is an extra skill. With the push of a button, you can turn on LED outlines for a numpad and use it to punch in digits. Mm. So that's pretty cool, too.
All right.
Now, I routinely work with dual display computers at work, and so I love the idea of this.
Yeah.
Yeah, they show a video of them having like stuff up on the top and then having like a YouTube video snapped to the bottom in Steam kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm thinking, oh, okay, that's just interesting where my mind just went. work on the top, porn hub on the bottom.
Or you just have like four porns going at once. You just need all of it at once.
All the porn.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Oh, next up. iTunes is dead.
About fucking time.
Apple is about to take it out back to behind the woodshed and put a bullet in its head.
Yeah, but I don't think they're replacing it with anything, though.
No, I think they're just sort of...
They are replacing it with three apps. Essentially one for music, one for TV, and one for podcasts.
Yeah, basically they're just integrating it into all their other stuff. So
yeah, sort of how...
What I was wondering, what happens to all the money that people have sunk into iTunes over the years?
Yeah,
well, I'm guessing there.
Yeah, and I'm guessing all the material that you download in iTunes, they'll just migrate it over to that other stuff.
Yeah,
okay. Just pointed at the.
This isn't so much an end of service as it is a rebranding.
Well, mm-hmm. Yeah, they're basically just getting rid of the desktop client.
Yeah,
yeah, which has been. Terrible for years.
Yeah.
I had an iPod Touch about 10 years ago, and the idea of syncing these apps never made any sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I wanted to just add like one or two things to it from the app.
Yep.
And it had to change all of it.
Yeah.
I was like, why can't you just add the thing to it? Mm. That's why I don't have an Apple device ever since then.
Yeah.
So it's like I don't want to deal with this bullshit.
Nope.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so it's sort of like how it is on iPhones and iPads where you just have the separate apps that you access the thing you wanted.
Yeah.
They're kind of decentralizing it
mm-hmm.
In a way that probably makes more sense and allows them to make each of those apps better for those specific things versus it having to accommodate everything.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and actually try it when it gets released, at least the music mm-hmm. part of it, because it's really the only one part of it that I'd be interested in. So,
yeah.
All right. And So Netflix, which let's be honest, it pretty much dominates all television right now.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since Game of Thrones is now over.
Yeah.
It has acquired the worldwide rights to two of the recent winners of the Cannes Film Festival, Atlantics and I Lost My Body.
Yeah. See, Atlantics was awarded the grand prize, and I Lost My Body was voted the best film at the Independent International Critics Week.
Hmm.
Atlantics has a little bit of a weird story. It tells the story of 17-year-old Ada, who is in love with Suleiman, but has been promised to another man. And I guess there's a bunch of stuff happens as a result of that. Not really going to go into it too much, but Unless My Body is a bit weird. It follows a cut-off hand as it escapes from a dissection lab with one crucial goal: to get back to its body.
Mm-hmm.
As it scrambles through the pitfalls of Paris, it remembers its life with the young man who it was once attached to until they met Gabriel. Mm-hmm. Gabrielle.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is a series that, well, a movie, basically, that, yeah.
It's like the opposite of Idle Hands.
Because
this sounds weird.
Yeah.
I think both of these are French films, so.
It's indie French movies, so yeah, it's going to be bizarre and uncomfortable and giving you a serious case of the why boner all at the same time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Why?
Yeah. Next up, a bit from our childhood is returning. Blue's Clues is returning to Nickelodeon with a new title and a new host. It's going to be called Blue's Clues and You.
Yep.
And it's being hosted by
Josh De La Cruz, who's a Broadway actor.
Yep.
I forget what his character is going to be. I think it might just be Josh.
Mm.
But yeah, the original Steve helped find this new guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he actually has like a good singing voice, so it'd be good for that part of the show.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can watch like the little. Well, I don't think they have the video here, the trailer they put out, but it looks like it's going to be pretty good for kids.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of CG now instead of just the green screen 2D.
The green screen 2D with like the arts and crafts,
yeah.
You know, paper mache aesthetic that the original had.
Hmm. Yeah.
I know I shit on meme culture a lot, but it did produce a very interesting concept for a reboot of this show. And that was when a letter arrives and they open it up and it has a very recognizable handprint on it. We know. I would watch the shit out of that.
I think that would be a very different kind of show.
Oh, yes. Yes, it would.
He would have some decisions to make.
It would also explain why, why Blue hasn't grown in size, even though she's, what, 10 plus years old now?
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
But she's an immortal vampire child. Anyway. Next up, we have a teaser trailer for Rambo Last Blood, which I'm guessing is going to be the final nail in the coffin of the Rambo franchise.
Yeah, so. Maybe.
Maybe.
But yeah, it seems fun.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. A lot of people, because Rambo in this weird way sort of became like the epitome of like the bloody action movie hero.
Yeah.
But that's all because of Rambo Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you've seen First Blood, which is the original Rambo movie.
Yeah.
It is far and away a very different kind of film.
Yeah,
it's kind of a tragic movie.
Yeah.
Kind of very indicative of the way that our military veterans were treated upon coming home from like the Vietnam War and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the U.S. Army was on Twitter
mm-hmm.
Around, I think it was a couple days before Memorial Day, but basically asking people how their service has treated them. Like,
yeah.
It's going to be like, oh, my life has been changed for the better. It was like, no, this has made my life miserably worse.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's
the PTSD nightmares and the shakes.
And talking about their family that's had issues.
My uncle lost both of his legs.
It's like, oh, hey, yeah, you thought you were going to come in with this clever Twitter hashtag bullshit. It's like, no.
Propaganda.
Yeah. How that works.
That's... Like, brand Twitters can be fun because it's like, oh, these fast food companies are just being weird.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's the military comes into it, it's like, you fucking kill people.
Yeah.
Like, quit trying to act like you're just pumping out French fries and burgers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You guys aren't Wendy's. You're agents of the capitalist bourgeois who go overseas to kill brown people.
Mm.
Don't.
Yeah.
Don't try and play this trick with us.
Yeah. And he tried to ruin people's lives with stuff like Agent Orange.
Yeah.
And, you know, the nuclear bomb in Hiroshima. Yeah.
And basically withholding funding for the VA.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the other thing, like, we completely screw over our veterans that are supposed to be really important the way the GOP acts like it. But they don't get the support or funding that they should to help them cope with life after, you know, being in combat.
Yeah.
And the other thing I got was like,
back to the trailer, the trailer here. It's like John Rambo is a very fucked up person now.
Yes. He's always been a very fucked up person. Yeah.
That's the premise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, kind of, this movie's going to be coming out in September and I'm kind of looking forward to it.
Yeah. September 20th. Yeah, it's like that's been like the part of that series that's been kind of neat is like they're not too far off from the way like combat veterans come back to this country and how they're affected by war and all that, the way other people treat them and the way they are kind of affected trying to get back into normal life.
Yeah.
As for as much as that's always come off as like a, you know, very much like a bro. Action series at a certain point.
At least number two and three are.
Yeah.
But number two was also like very indicative of like the Reagan era.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like the thing I most know about those movies is like the UHF segment.
Mm. Yeah.
Where Weird Al is playing just the super ripped dude just firing guns at all the brown people running after him.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like, yeah, that's kind of what the stereotype is about the series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a more dark version of that.
Pretty much. And finally, last story for the night, we got a trailer for Netflix's A Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance.
And I had no interest in this series until I saw this trailer.
So, how many of you guys have seen The Dark Crystal?
Oh, I have.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Hmm. I've seen it.
No.
All right. The Dark Crystal is a handful of those 80s kids movies that is known for being absolutely nightmare-inducing.
Yeah.
You know, you got the never-ending story with, you know...
God, the wolf in that fucked me up.
Oh, not just the wolf, but seeing that wonderful horse slowly drowning in a swamp.
Yeah. I just remember every time they cut to the wolf in the cave, I was like, oh god, I can't watch this.
Yeah. There was, you know, Return to Oz, which, oh, you thought it was going to be a sequel to the oh-so-sweet-and-cheery 1940s movie with Judy Garland. No, this is based on and inspired by L. Frank Baum stuff. We don't play.
Beginning, she's in a mental institution.
Yep.
Breaks out, goes to Oz, and then
finds out that basically the apocalypse happened.
And like one of the big baddies, like essentially just has a series of heads she puts onto her body whenever she needs it. And it's like that's fucked up.
Yeah,
as a kid to watch.
Yeah. Well,
so yeah, this is one of those movies. It was a basically an attempt by Jim Henson and his longtime collaborator Frank Oz to sort of branch out into more sophisticated forms of storytelling. This is like this movie and Labyrinth. It was like that time, that particular era, you know?
Yeah.
And basically, unlike Labyrinth, which had both, you know, human actors and, of course, the puppetry, that Henson and company are known for, this one was all puppetry basically.
Yeah.
And it was horrifying. Yes. I mean, story wise it was basically meant to be sort of like, you know, off-brand Tolkien.
Yeah,
not bad off-brand Tolkien, mind you, but
same line of thinking.
Yeah.
It's just the instead, way those puppets looked and moved, it was
and ate.
Yeah, that was not right.
Yeah. And also had some nice talent to it with David Bowie and Jennifer Connelly.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I get those two mixed up.
Mm. Yeah. It's okay.
Easy.
Yeah. Mm. I guess it's a movie I remember watching and not really liking because it's so different from The Muppets, which I loved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
those movies.
Like I said, that was sort of why Hansen wanted to do it, because he wanted to get out of the, out of the Muppets
pigeonhole.
He'd been given, and to give him credit, I mean, visually, as far as like effects and visual storytelling are concerned, those movies do really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, there's a reason why he's so highly respected.
Yeah.
Still doesn't keep him from basically keeping me up at night.
Yeah,
and I'm sure this will traumatize another generation of kids.
God, that scene with the Skeksis having dinner alone is like,
yep, okay,
yeah,
yeah. This is when Jim Henson got to let his freak flag fly.
Mm. Oh yeah, apparently there was a lot more that they were going to do with this whole franchise too, which is kind of the reason why this series came about. Because on top of this, there was like a whole series of like comic books and like art books and like, like character books and stuff like that, that were, basically, I think they were intending to make this like a series of movies.
Yeah.
And have like a lot more. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess there was a game too. Designed by Roberta
Williams.
Yeah, I think
there was a Nintendo game. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, not but an Atari. Yeah. Atari game.
Published under Sierra Venture Line in 1983.
Yeah. Is this so? Have they said, is this movie going to be all puppets too, or is it going to be like partly CG?
I think it's partially, just from what the trailer shows. Like, there's some acrobatics with the puppets, and I'm assuming they aren't that good. Okay. Making the puppets do things, but yeah, it's gonna be a show. It's gonna be out August 30th, so in a few months.
Yeah, so this is a series, so we're going to get the first season of episodes, I'm guessing, all at once.
Yeah. If it's Netflix, that's usually what they do.
Mm. Yeah, they have this listed under genres: family watch together TV, TV dramas, TV sci-fi, and fantasy. The show is imaginative.
They really should add another category there: nightmare fuel.
Yeah. That's mostly what you do when you're like a parent, and you're. It's like, no, this is just to get my kids in line so that I can.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, hey, little Jimmy, we need to do something. It's going to change you forever.
Yeah.
Let's sit down and we're going to watch The Dark Crystal.
Yeah.
Or watch Labyrinth.
It was made by Jim Henson. You know how you love those Muppets, son. All right, Daddy. And then it's like an hour and a half later and you're like, well, Jimmy, what did you think? Oh, fuck yourself, Daddy.
This is what happens to the Muppets in the future, son.
All that you will love will die.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I want to say that you. Oh, yeah, The Storyteller. That's another series they did for back in the 80s. That was kind of really creepy to me.
Mm. Oh, yeah. That was just the whole age of like, yeah, we got to make children's media as nightmare-inducing as possible.
Yeah, it's like
if
now,
it's not selling toys, it needs to be.
We need to leave a scar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To have you come back 30 years later when we make Netflix versions of these things.
Yeah. All right. Well, all right. I believe we got ourselves a show, folks.
Ooh, do we ever.
Yeah, so. With that, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked for you in the show notes. Also, on top of the soon-to-be-deceased iTunes, you can catch our little bit of insanity at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator or anything where our cast, our little bit of recordings can be downloaded and enjoyed with your ear mouths. That delicious sweet oral chocolate that is my horrifying southern drawl. So, with that, I have been your host with the most brave Perkins, and for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Sologi, good night.